Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Cambridge-based Moderna says its coronavirus vaccine is effective for 12 to 17-year-olds. The company is now going to seek FDA authorization for emergency use with that age group. And if authorized, it would become available for kids 12 and older alongside the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Now, meanwhile, almost 3.5 million Massachusetts residents are now fully vaccinated. That's close to 50% of the state. And this weekend, the Commonwealth's last COVID-19 restrictions lift in most settings. So, listeners, it's Tuesday. You know what to do. It's time to ask the doctors. Call with your coronavirus questions, your reopening questions, your vaccine and mask questions. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With us this week, Dr. Shira Doron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center, and Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and an infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center. Dr. Doron, welcome back.
Great to be back.
Dr. Pierre, thanks for joining us again.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So, Dr. Pierre, I'll start with you and this Moderna news. Based on a clinical trial that enrolled almost 4,000 folks between the ages of 12 and 17, we get this information. No cases of symptomatic COVID-19 in those vaccinated. 100% is a pretty full number. So how should we absorb and think about those results?
You know, I think these results are very similar to what we were seeing in the Pfizer trial for 12 to 16-year-olds in that the vaccine is highly effective and very safe for kids of this age group. And, you know, similar to what we saw with Pfizer and Moderna in the clinical trials for adults, we know that this is an excellent number. What we will actually see in the real-world setting will probably be a little less than 100% effective, but even still, we know that in the real-world setting, very few people who are fully vaccinated are experiencing infection and sincerely, you know, very low numbers of severe complications or hospitalizations or death. So this is all incredibly good news in the real world. Will the efficacy be 100% for either the Pfizer or the Moderna? Probably not. Probably it'll be a little bit less. But even still, we see that there is an incredible response that kids of this age group are making to the vaccine. There's a really great immune response. And so that gives us a real amount of confidence when it comes to thinking about classroom settings, summer camp, going on vacation with the family.
So, Dr. Doron, I want to stay with that for a minute. You know, breakthrough cases get reported. So we hear about multiple members of the New York Yankees, for example, experiencing breakthrough cases after vaccination. I think it makes it hard for the layperson to get a sense for just how effective in the real world these vaccines are. Now, Dr. Pierre just made some comments about that, but how do we put into perspective when we do hear about breakthrough cases in news stories?
It's true. Breakthrough cases are happening. That is what we expected. I'm seeing them almost every day, but almost every breakthrough case I see is asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. That's what we wanted. We wanted to, some people call it defang the virus. We wanted to turn this virus into a nuisance, a common cold, nothing to be worried about.
How hard will it be for people, Dr. Pierre, to take something we have been conditioned to be so afraid of for so long and rethink of it as a nuisance?
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of mental adjustment there for so many things. The mask mandate, thinking about, you know, what it means when we see COVID positivity numbers or spikes after holiday weekends and what that actually translates to in the burden of disease. I think it's going to be a process, to be honest. We're going to be concerned for a while, you know, with each variant that we hear about. And the real test will be how we do, you know, in our communities, in our city, in the state, and in the country, in withstanding the effects of those rises and falls in cases. So I really do think, I don't have a great answer, but I think it's going to be time. I think it's going to be what we see in our families, what we see when we are back to in-person schooling fully, and how we do really just to start after this holiday weekend as we think about lifting the mask mandate. So every new milestone that we hit in our new normal will give us an idea of what we can expect going forward. So hopefully that will be continuing to build on the success we made.
Thank you. 1-800-423-8255 to ask your questions. I am going to turn to the phones in just a moment. But before I do, Dr. Durone, the CDC is now looking into a heart problem in a few young Pfizer vaccine recipients. Can you tell us what they're looking at and how serious that issue is? Does it affect our sense of the efficacy and safety of the Pfizer vaccine for kids?
Yeah. So, you know, this isn't actually new news. Israel was looking into this same issue earlier in their vaccination program. And, you know, I am encouraged that the CDC is being transparent about the fact that they're looking at it. I'm encouraged by the fact that they have made a clear statement that they do not see a signal that the rate of this heart inflammation in the vaccinated population is greater than the rate of that same condition in an unvaccinated population. And that's really the key question with any side effects or supposed side effects that people are reporting after vaccination. And we know, I might feel less encouraged if I didn't already know, that with the J&J vaccine, the system picked up an extremely rare complication, those blood clots with low platelets that did appear to be associated with the vaccine, at a rate of, you know, 6 cases out of 7 million vaccines. And that was over and above the what we call the baseline rate or the underlying population rate of that condition. So while I am, you know, anxiously waiting for the result of their investigation, I feel pretty confident that they're going to find that, unfortunately, this condition does occur with some regular incidence in the population, even without vaccination.
All right, so let's turn to the phones now, 800-423-8255, to ask your question. We've got Natalie on the line in Cambridge. Natalie, what's your question for the doctors?
Hi, I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in April, right before the pause. And after the CDC made their announcement last week that vaccinated people could go unmasked, I read the studies that they used to make their decision, and all of those studies seem to be on people who received Pfizer or Moderna. And I've tried to search for real-world data regarding Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and I can't find anything. So it seems clear to me that Johnson & Johnson's vaccine wasn't considered in their decision and that it's not as effective as Moderna or Pfizer. So my question is, can I go and get a shot of Pfizer or Moderna to supplement the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that I already received?
Thank you, Natalie. So, Dr. Pierre, let's take it in three pieces. Natalie asserts CDC didn't take Johnson & Johnson into account. It is less effective. Can I get a booster of one of the others? So maybe just briefly address all three pieces of that.
Sure. That's a great question, Natalie. So it is true that the decision made by the CDC to relax the mask mandate for vaccinated individuals took into account real-world studies on the mRNA vaccines, because those were the first that had the EUA approval. And so we have the preponderance of information about real-world effects and events on populations in countries with these vaccines. We have less information to date with Johnson & Johnson. The information that you mentioned that establishes lower efficacy for Johnson & Johnson is pulled from different numbers that we see for effectiveness in reducing infection among individuals with Johnson & Johnson and between studies between the Pfizer and the Moderna. So we saw about 95% of efficacy in reducing COVID-19 infection in the mRNA vaccines, and closer to about 70% in this country in prevention of COVID-19 for Johnson & Johnson. However, we've said before that these studies were done during different time periods where there was a higher level of variants of concern. These were different populations, and so they may not be as comparable as we think they may be in head-to-head studies.
I'm sorry, higher levels of variants of concern in play with the J&J study than with Moderna and Pfizer, correct?
That's correct. Thank you for clarifying that. There were more variants of concern in the populations being studied with the Johnson & Johnson studies than in the mRNA vaccine. So you had a little bit of a tailwind, you know, a little bit of an issue with the Johnson & Johnson, and that, you know, you were evaluating the efficacy in populations that had higher numbers of variants of concern. That all being said, we know that all of these vaccines are extremely good at preventing severe complications of COVID-19 and hospitalization and death. So that is a really important thing to consider. So I would say that, you know, it's always up to the individual in terms of when they feel ready to stop the mask at this point, given the CDC's and our state's mandates. But we have good information about the efficacy of Johnson & Johnson alone by itself. And so in answer to the third part of the question, can you get a booster with an mRNA vaccine, that is currently not a recommendation that we have by the CDC, by our state, and really no data to prove improving efficacy with those boosters. So I would say most places would not do that at this time. I understand that this leaves a little bit of limbo for people who have gotten the Johnson & Johnson, but we really do have good information about the efficacy of these vaccines, similar to the mRNA vaccines in preventing severe complications and death. And as Dr. DeRoe mentioned earlier, our drive is always to think about defanging the virus, and that's what these do.
Thank you for that. Let's go back to the phones here, 800-423-8255. Sarah's in Scituate with a question. Sarah, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So I'm calling because I'm just concerned about the timing of removing the mask mandate. It seems counterintuitive to have people remove their masks on a holiday weekend. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've got the Moderna vaccine. I feel comfortable outdoors. Indoors, I know it's a choice. I can still wear it, but it just seems very strange to do it on a holiday weekend. So I'm sort of interested to get someone's take on that.
All right, let's go to you, Dr. DeRoe.
Well, I don't know, you know, certainly what the rationale was behind May 29th as a specific date. You know, I think that I hope that a lot of the holiday gatherings will actually be outdoors. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of focus right now on what is the right timing of removing mask mandates. And I think one of the failures of public health messaging has been not giving us any warning or necessarily any clear rationale for moving from one phase to another in terms of masking. I think it makes a lot of sense to plan to remove mask mandates based on something like percent vaccinated plus the rate of infection in the population plus perhaps the number of patients hospitalized in that population. Unfortunately, that wasn't laid out in advance, so May 29th sounds sort of like it came out of thin air. But I feel very, very good about the steep downward trajectory of cases in the community. And I feel like vaccinated people are certainly safe indoors doing really anything with or without a mask. And unvaccinated people are increasingly safer every day with our plummeting case numbers.
800-423-8255. We've got Cattell on the line in Arlington. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering when we would get more information on the longevity of the vaccine. Like, I am really glad we have them. I got the Pfizer vaccine. I think that they're very effective. But I don't know if this is going to be a yearly process or even, you know, someone who got it in January versus someone who gets it now, you know, how long the protection lasts. Thanks.
Dr. Pierre, go ahead.
Yeah, so yes, an excellent question. Now, as we start to near, you know, for some of us, the 6-month mark post-vaccination, I you know, we certainly have information that shows we continue to have above 90% efficacy for individuals who have received the mRNA vaccines, you know, at 6 months after over 90% efficacy. So that's pretty good. But there are increasing signs that there may need to be revaccination or a booster, rather, at 12 months after the initial vaccination. So we are having a little bit more information now that seems to suggest we will probably need to expect and anticipate a booster. We don't have conclusive evidence or recommendations at this point, so we all still need to stay tuned, but we at least have information to show these vaccines' efficacy is excellent and remains excellent 6 months after the initial vaccination. For more information, more duration data, we'll still have to, you know, stay tuned and take a listen.
Let's go to Arjun in Roxbury. Arjun, you are on with a question. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. So I was reading an article about vaccine efficacy, the mRNA vaccine. Dr. Fauci had stated that there was a question about whether you have antibodies if vaccines are necessary. And his response was that the vaccine, mRNA vaccine, will increase your antibody response response up to 10 times. So that's a lot. And given that the body's resources to fight off viruses, bacteria, are finite, my question was, is that pathological response going to be a detriment to an immune system when a new variant or a different virus hits the wild? Will that be, will it be possible or more difficult to for the body to fight off those viruses, given that it had focused so much of its immunology and its attention to that one strain or that variety of strains that the mRNA vaccines coded for?
Thanks, Arjun. So, Dr. Daron, does it use it all up and leave us maybe more exposed to other kinds of infections or strains of illness?
Yeah, no, the immune system is an amazing thing, and it can be exposed to so many different pathogens, and then, or, you know, or a synthetic version of that pathogen, and then antibodies, but not just antibodies, memory T cells and memory B cells can come raging back to fight that pathogen. We also know that the virus, in this case, can look quite different and can be a variant and can still be neutralized by our immune system, even if it was exposed to, you know, wild-type virus or, you know, the original sequence virus that was used to make the vaccine. I think there might have also been a piece of that question that was about people who had prior COVID and their antibody response, and you know, that's something that's been talked about a lot, is, you know, as a rationale for people with prior COVID having, you know, agreeing to be vaccinated, you know, part of it is that we do see that there is an increase in the antibody response after vaccination and people have had prior COVID, and perhaps an even more complete immunologic response or coverage for people who are vaccinated. And so that's one of the, you know, pieces of rationale for the CDC to make a recommendation for people with prior COVID to be vaccinated, although I think that does need further study to see if, you know, they should perhaps only have one dose of mRNA vaccine or if maybe it doesn't make a difference in the real world. So more on that.
So, I do just want to note, one of our producers, Jamie Bologna, did pull an article. Dr. Fauci did say levels up to 10 times that of natural infection, but he did also remind us that those are laboratory data, not proven outside the clinic.
Exactly.
Let's try to pick up one more call here. We've got Donna on the line in Chelsea. Donna, go ahead.
Hi, I'm 65 years old, and I just received my second shingles shot. I have not been vaccinated with COVID by Moderna or Pfizer yet. What should be the longevity that I wait after my second shingles shot?
Good question. And Dr. Pierre, if you could answer that for, in general, if you've had some other shot or vaccine, how long should you wait, shingles and others?
You know, I think this is kind of an evolving recommendation. We have previously recommended that individuals wait 14 days from the time of another vaccine to get vaccinated with COVID-19, or vice versa, waiting a certain period of time after receiving the COVID vaccine to get another vaccine to avoid any, you know, interactions, any concerns about side effects that may be attributable to one or both of the vaccines. So I would say, you know, if you can and you're not, you know, at risk, any particularly, which you shouldn't be if you live in the Commonwealth, there's not, you know, our numbers are down and you have the time, we would say, usually 2 weeks, just to be sure. I think there's some compelling data that, you know, if for people who are thinking about booster shots, for example, or we're thinking about people coming in and getting repeat vaccinations, limited exposures to healthcare settings, we might want to think about getting those at the same time to improve our ability to get people vaccinated. But I would say that, you know, John, if you have the time and you can go back, and I highly recommend that you do. Thank you for asking this question. 14 days is what we have been recommending in the perfect world.
All right. That is Dr. Cassandra Pierre, acting hospital epidemiologist and an infectious diseases physician at Boston Medical Center, and Dr. Shira Daron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks to both of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Great to be here.